Australia overnight repealed its innovative tax on gases linked to climate change.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Why does industry put out so much carbon dioxide? Because in most places, there is no cost. It can be dumped for free. In the fight against climate change, many economists have argued that putting a price on those emissions is one way to rein them in. Australia was one big country that adopted a carbon tax. But after a vote today, that tax is no more. The BBC's Phil Mercer joins us from Sydney. Phil, good morning.
Yes, morning to you, David.
Australia was, past tense, was a world leader on putting a price on carbon dioxide emissions. What has happened now?
Well, really two words. Tony Abbott, he is the Conservative Prime Minister of Australia who came to power 10 months ago. He has been on an evangelical political mission to axe the carbon tax. He says the levy was a handbrake on the Australian economy. He said it was useless and destroyed jobs. And so Australia's price on carbon is no more. But safe to say, critics of the government insist that he's committed not only an environmental blunder, but a very serious economic one as well.
Now, the U.S., of course, is a major emitter of carbon dioxide, China as well. But Australia, an industrialized country, per capita does put out a lot of carbon.
It's one of the world's highest per capita emitters of greenhouse gases, thanks to a reliance on very cheap and plentiful supplies of coal. Australia is the world's leading coal exporter. Now, ministers in Canberra, the Australian capital, will contend that because Australia is responsible for less than 1.5% of global emissions, whatever they do is inconsequential until there are more serious moves by the really big polluters, including the United States, Russia, China, and the European Union.
The BBC's Phil Mercer talking to us this morning from Sydney. Phil, thank you.
Thanks, David.
Sticking with air pollution, but of a different kind now, Marketplace's series We Used to Be China looks at acid rain today, which ruined lakes, hurt wildlife, and among other things, wrecked the finish of cars parked outside. A clean air law in 1990 greatly reduced the pollutants that caused acid rain in the U.S., in part through something called cap and trade. That's a mechanism that sets the maximum level of pollution and lets industry work out among themselves how to meet the cap. But as Dan Bobkoff reports, that system is falling apart.
Karen Roy was in grad school in the early 80s when two things made her realize acid rain was a big deal. The first was a mountain in Vermont.
The forest decline on Camel's Hump.
The second clue was hearing about dying lakes in the Northeast.
There were people talking about the record fish that were no longer found.
Roy now manages the Adirondack Long-Term Monitoring Program. She and her team are heading to a pond near Lake Placid, New York.
Walk where you see more of your...
They're going to check how acidic the water is these days. But first, we have to hike through a forest.
What affects the forest ultimately affects lakes and streams as well. It's just down gradient.
Forests and lakes are connected, but how they recover from acid rain is very different. Since the bad old days of the 70s and 80s, there's a whole lot less acid falling in the Northeast. That's mostly thanks to the 1990 Clean Air Act. That's made a big difference to lakes and streams, many now coming back to life.
It's just like everyone... Wow, that problem is solved. Now we can think about something else.
Gene Likens was one of the first people to discover acid rain in the U.S. He says forests are having a much tougher time. Years of acid rain falling on their soils has leached away calcium and other minerals that used to neutralize the acid. So even though today's rain is far less acidic, sensitive forests are less able to deal with it.
The system is more sensitive. And so one could argue that the impact is as bad as it was in 1990 when we passed the Clean Air Act amendments.
Trees like sugar maple and red spruce are suffering the most. They need a lot of calcium and the soils are depleted. Charles Driscoll of Syracuse University says forests are on a completely different timeline than lakes.
Some will recover on the order of decades, but others will not recover for many, many, many decades.
That's why, despite all the progress made since 1990, Likens and Driscoll would like to see lawmakers reduce smokestack emissions even more. In New York, I'm Dan Bobkoff from Marketplace.
Time to check stocks. The 100-share index in London is down 0.4%. The key stock index in Russia, the MISEX, is down nearly 2.8% now after the U.S. applied new economic sanctions against Russian businesses because of that country's support of rebels in Ukraine. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down this morning. know that younger people are not buying cars like they used to, and some of the slack in the real estate market is also blamed on those young folks with their urban renter lifestyles. But according to a new study from the online real estate company Trulia, that diagnosis has a problem. Marketplace's Chrissy Clark reports from our Wealth and Poverty Desk.
Jed Kolko is the chief economist at Trulia, and he says when you look at the data,
18 to 34-year-olds today look about as likely to own a home as 18 to 34-year-olds 20 years ago.
If you knew there was an if, right?
We adjust for the big change in demographics.
Like the fact that young adults today are much less likely to be married or have kids. But the ones who are married with kids, they're buying homes at the same rates as they did in 1997. Coco says there is a generation where homeownership really has declined, even once you adjust for demographics, middle-aged folks.
The 35 to 54-year-old group was more affected both by the housing bubble and the foreclosure crisis.
Amy Garish, a 36-year-old in Phoenix, went through foreclosure in the crash and then rented. It takes years once a foreclosure happens to even be considered for a home loan again.
Yeah, as soon as that date started coming up, we started looking.
And recently, she bought another home. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
Now, if you have a plane, train, or automobile trip in your near future, know that our digital team has put together a Marketplace app to make things even more portable. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.